What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Democrats have reached a framework on a massive spending bill. What's next? And Facebook has a new name, why the company is rebranding. Plus, big oil is facing challenges as investors push them to go green.
It's very clear that these companies not only are under pressure, but that the pressure is leading to changes at the companies and really forcing them to rethink what they want to be in the future.
It's Thursday, October 28th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The White House has released a $1.85 trillion social spending and climate framework, a proposal that top Democrats hope will be enough to get progressives on board. It calls for major funding for childcare subsidies, tax breaks for families, and tax credits aimed at combating climate change. But as we reported this morning, a parental paid leave program was stripped from the legislation, and other Democratic priorities remain uncertain. Still, in a televised speech earlier today, President Biden called the framework historic.
We spent hours and hours and hours over months and months working on this. No one got everything they wanted, including me. But that's what compromise is. That's consensus. And that's what I ran on.
The proposal is far slimmer than the $3.5 trillion package that Democrats had initially envisioned. Top House Democrats are also trying to appease party progressives, who have threatened to block the $1 trillion infrastructure bill that's already cleared the Senate without a deal on the broader social policy and climate bill. In a major move, Facebook is rebranding itself.
I am proud to announce that starting today, our company is now Meta.
CEO Mark Zuckerberg said the new name aligns with the company's new goal to be a key player in developing the metaverse.
We've gone from desktop to web to phones, from text to photos to video, but this isn't the end of the line. The next platform and medium will be even more immersive, an embodied internet where you're in the experience, not just looking at it. And we call this the metaverse.
Facebook is already heavily invested in augmented and virtual reality products and services, including its Oculus VR headsets and new Ray-Ban smart sunglasses. The social media platform also recently announced plans for 10,000 jobs in Europe in the next 5 years to develop metaverse-related endeavors. Facebook is one of many big tech companies pursuing similar objectives. Analysts are saying that the space is compelling, but may take many years to come to fruition. We have much more on Facebook, aka Meta, and its plans for the metaverse on tomorrow's Tech News Briefing podcast. In other news, the U.S. economy grew by 2% in the third quarter, much slower than earlier in the year, as the Delta variant and supply chain issues dampened gains. It was the weakest quarter of growth since the recovery began last year, according to the Commerce Department. Analysts say growth could accelerate during the holidays. Meanwhile, weekly jobless claims continue to fall. Initial unemployment benefits dropped to 281,000 last week, according to the Labor Department, a new pandemic low. Employers are trying to hold on to workers and compete in a tight labor market by paying more. Average hourly earnings for all private sector workers rose 4.6% in September from a year earlier. That's the fastest rate of growth since February. U.S. stocks have been climbing on strong earnings reports. Today, the S&P 500 hit a new closing high, up 1%. The Nasdaq also hit a fresh record, adding 1.4%, and the Dow was up 0.7%. Amazon posted $110.8 million in quarterly sales after the bell. That was lower than expected and a sign labor and supply chain shortages are slowing growth. The latest quarter was also the company's first under new chief executive Andy Jassy, who succeeded founder Jeff Bezos in July. The company saw growth in cloud computing and its digital ad business, which is increasingly competing with Google and Facebook's powerful ad platforms. Meanwhile, Apple soared to a year-end record, including profits nearing $100 billion. But the company is cautioning that supply chain disruptions could also pose challenges for it in the holiday season. Apple had warned over the summer that disruptions from the global chip shortage could affect its iPhone line. Today, Apple's CFO said those disruptions were worse than expected. A criminal complaint has been filed against former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, alleging that he forcibly touched a former executive assistant. Cuomo was charged with a misdemeanor in Albany City Court and a summons was issued. The former governor has been under investigation since one of his former executive assistants filed a complaint in early August. Cuomo resigned in the wake of those allegations and that of 10 other women. His attorney did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Coming up, how big oil companies are responding to green pressures from activist investors.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Big Oil has been under a lot of pressure lately. Today, top executives from Exxon, Chevron, Royal Dutch Shell, and BP were grilled by House Democrats, who accused the companies of spreading misinformation about the role fossil fuels play in causing global warming. New York Representative Carolyn Maloney is the chairwoman of the Committee on Oversight and Reform.
After four decades of deception and delay, it is time for the fossil fuel industry to finally change its ways.
All four companies said they acknowledge the threat of climate change and are cutting their carbon emissions to minimize their contributions to it. But lawmakers are not the only ones pushing for reform. Activist investors have been working to steer oil giants to rethink their businesses, with climate change in mind. Just this week, we've reported that hedge fund Third Point urged Shell to split into two standalone companies. Shell is pushing back. But what does the changing environment mean for the legacy companies? Joining me now with more is our global energy and climate editor, Miguel Bustillo. Hi, Miguel. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Miguel, to start, can you tell us the latest on the pressure Shell is under from activist investor Third Point? How much sway might the hedge fund have here?
Well, this is a very interesting development because Shell has been under tremendous pressure to begin with from a variety of places, investors, governments, activists, environmentalists, people who want to see it go in different directions. And what's fascinating about this challenge is that this is a challenge coming from a hedge fund, which is essentially saying this company might be better if it was two companies, a company that was focused on greener initiatives, and then a second company with a legacy business that would be more focused on its traditional business of producing oil and gas.
And this is similar in some ways to the pressure ExxonMobil was under earlier this year, also from an activist investor, Engine Number One. That hedge fund won seats on Exxon's board. What does that example tell us about the influence that activist investors can have even on big legacy oil companies?
Yeah, it's very similar and interesting. And I think what it shows is that they are having an impact. The Exxon example, I think, is partly what makes this Shell thing so fascinating because in the case of Exxon, the investor Engine Number One was a very small investor, but it ended up having a very big impact on the company. And now it was able to nominate three new members to Exxon's board, which is kind of an unheard of change at a big company like this. So it's very clear that these companies not only are under pressure, but that the pressure is leading to changes at the companies and really forcing them to rethink what they want to be in the future.
And for the oil companies themselves, how are they trying to strike that balance between meeting these demands to seek greener energy sources and invest in renewables, while at the same time maintaining their extremely profitable legacy businesses in fossil fuels?
I would say that they're struggling right now. They're struggling to find that balance. And, you know, frankly, if you look at Exxon and Shell, in some ways, they've tackled that question very differently. Exxon has thus far chosen to focus on its legacy business, on oil and gas. Exxon is not investing in renewables, for example. It is investing in what it calls a low carbon business, which is things like carbon capture and other measures that it can take to reduce carbon emissions, but it has not gotten into wind and solar energy, et cetera. Shell, meanwhile, has pursued a more diversified approach where it has begun investing in green energy. And what's fascinating, again, about comparing these two case studies is that they're both coming under pressure regardless. So there's no clear answer here that's going to let these companies evade what seems to be growing scrutiny and criticism about their business models.
We also had company executives from big oil companies on Capitol Hill today testifying. Can you tell us anything that has come out of those hearings today?
The subject of the hearing is whether big oil contributed to disinformation on climate change. So here we have top executives from the oil companies being called before a congressional committee and being asked this question of whether they essentially knew more about climate than they have let on and whether they have contributed to what some see as a very polarized debate on this issue by essentially trying to muddy the waters. And I think the hearing is indicative of the kind of growing pressure that the companies are facing from politicians, in addition to investors and others, on some of these questions.
To that point, we are looking ahead to a big climate summit next week. And as we've talked about, big oil is facing pressure not only from activist investors, but lawmakers, environmentalists, the general public to reinvent their businesses. Is the tide turning on this issue? And how will big oil companies need to adapt?
Well, it's clear that they have to have a strategy for dealing with this. You know, whereas a few years ago, they might have been able to kind of fly under the radar, that's no longer the case. They're under tremendous scrutiny and are being asked to essentially be part of the solution by some of their investors and others. So the idea that they can just continue operating, you know, as oil companies in the status quo doesn't seem to be working. And I think there are increasing questions about where they should put their money going forward. Should they be diversifying or should they be winding down in some way their oil and gas business and returning money to shareholders? That seems to be where there are some different approaches right now emerging, with some oil companies essentially saying, we're going to stay in oil and we will reward our shareholders in the short term. And others who are saying, we're going to take that money that we're making and we're going to invest it in trying to transition into green energy.
That's Wall Street Journal global energy and climate editor Miguel Bustillo. Miguel, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And finally, now that pandemic restrictions at popular travel destinations have been lifted, vacation bookings are on the rise. And according to data from hotels and travel industry analysts, people are already committing to trips for next year's spring break and summer. Here's our travel reporter, Allison Poley.
Some people are eyeing international destinations, trying to find cheap flights. Other people are booking domestically. But there are a lot of people who have to use travel credits next summer, or maybe they didn't get to go on a big trip that they had planned for 2020 or 2021. They're thinking, yes, 2022 is the year. I'm going to get it on the books. It's time to go. So for next spring and summer, a lot of people have their eye on Europe. So Italy, Greece, Croatia, France are all popular destinations, according to travel advisors. Outside of Europe, people are looking at the Caribbean, Galapagos Islands, even some safaris in Africa.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.